From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
It is the Boomer and the Babe Show, coming to you from our temporary studio in Sun City, Arizona, as we are no longer with the food bank, as they are in the process of moving and putting in some new offices and including a new location for us in their brand new big building, 36,000 square feet of food bank and thrift store at the corner of 107th Avenue in Peoria here in Sun City, Arizona. So we're operating out of some temporary studios, but nonetheless, there's plenty of food and plenty of things for people that are in need for food. Remember, food is always free at Valley View Community Food Bank. The executive director and founder, Jesse Ramirez, is also in need of volunteers, obviously money, and food stuff. So if you have an inclination to donate any of the above, aforementioned, I guess I should say, please give Jesse a call. Contact his website at valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. And I'm sure he will be more than happy to accept whatever it is that you have that you'd like to donate. Regardless of size and value, he can always has a great 501c3 that's allowed to be tax-deductible for that reason. And I am Pete Peters. As I mentioned, Deborah's not with me today. I've got I got a guest that's going to be on the show. She didn't know I was going to call her a guest, babe. I hope I'm not offending her by saying that, but we're going to get to her shortly. We are, of course, the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. In addition to this radio program, we publish mini books and ebook. Our ebook authors also have their own shows on the Boomer and the Babe here on Blog Talk. We invite you to give them a listen as well. We produce promotional products, videos, and do some businesses. We are truly a multifaceted, multimedia marketing company. The latest addition to our family is Experience Speaks, an online magazine, and we welcome you to go to boomerthebabe.com. Sign up for that magazine. It'll come free to your inbox every month that it's published, and we look forward to your doing that and hope you'll find many of our guests on the show, and many authors are also the contributors to the patient. With regard to today's show, today we have an interesting topical show as regards healthcare, and particularly healthcare as it involves Arizona. Recently, the Phoenix Business Journal had a series of articles about baby boomers, and they looked at trends that are developing, and for no other reason than the numbers, today's guest, those trends are developing, and for no other reason than the sheer number of boomers, of course. And today's guest with me is Angela Gonzalez. Angela is a senior reporter for the Business Journal, where she covers health, biotech, and education. She will be celebrating her 25th anniversary in September. She has won numerous awards over the years, including the Arizona Press Club's Community Journalist of the Year in 1994, 2012, the Eagle Award, the highest given by the Arizona City Business Journals, by the American City Business Journals. We're going to talk about the health care and some of Governor Brewer's choices that she has with regards to health care. And welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show. Angela Gonzalez, how are you today?
Good, Pete. How are you doing?
Oh, we're just fine. Just sitting there having a conversation. Yeah, I hope you didn't take offense that I called you the guest babe today.
Oh, no, that's okay. I just missed the baby boomer population status by 1 year, so it's all right.
Well, you don't have to, see, this is interesting because you don't have to be a baby boomer to be the babe. Okay, enough of that. Why don't you, if you don't mind, just give us a little of your background. I mean, I certainly read some of it in your bio there, but give me a little of your background as it regards what you've done in the past. You've spent 25 years. Now, that 25-year anniversary, that's with the Business Journal, correct?
Yes, it was my first job out of college, and, you know, they always say, you know, give it 3 to 5 years and head on to a new newspaper, but I never took that advice and just stayed here.
Oh, so you've been there for 25 years after studying at college. Where did you go to college?
Colorado State University. That's where I was born, Colorado.
Okay. What brought you to Arizona?
When my mom had moved out here, so I kind of followed her out.
Okay, very cool. And now you've been here long enough, I guess 5 years is what I was told before many years ago when I first came here, that 5 years made you a native if you'd been here.
Yeah, if you can endure 5 summers, then you're in.
Well, we've got one that we're having fun enduring today, this summer, aren't we, so far?
Definitely.
Pretty amazing. Well, let's talk a little bit about this project that the Phoenix Business Journal undertook with regard to baby boomers. This latest issue, there's a whole bunch of articles in there. I'm looking here, 3, 6, 9, 7 maybe, that are definitely directed toward the baby boomer population. What is it that caused them to undertake that?
You know, it's interesting. Over the past several years, we've had brainstorming ideas in our newsroom staff, and that was a package that we've always wanted to do, and we never got around to doing it. So we finally said, let's do it. Let's just get it done, because it's been something we've been thinking about for a really long time. So it was the 4th of July week, and we wanted to do a project over that 4th of July week, and that's what we chose.
Well, I tell you, it's an interesting project from the standpoint, as I mentioned, it's just the sheer numbers of the baby boomers that's in one of the articles. As a matter of fact, I think it's in one of the articles that you wrote. You contributed, what, 3 articles to that?
Oh, yes. You know, what was so interesting is I was working with the U.S. Census Bureau to try to get the numbers. I wanted to know the exact number of baby boomers we have in Arizona, and working with the U.S. Census Bureau, and that was really tough. I couldn't quite figured out. They sent me numbers that said, here are the number of people between the ages of 40 and 45, and then if you add them all up, you should kind of get a ballpark number. But it was ballpark, and it wasn't good enough. So luckily, they sent me to Jim Chang. He's actually the state demographer for Arizona. I didn't even know we had a state demographer. It was really interesting. And he's a numbers guy. I'm definitely not a numbers person the way he is. He actually gave me the most accurate number you can get for our Maricopa population, and then he threw in Pinal County too, since it's, you know, our valley is growing so quickly. And it was so interesting to see how many people we have here in Arizona and in our counties. But also it was interesting, too, because when we were all, each reporter wrote a story related to their particular beat. Our real estate reporter wrote about how the baby boomer population affected the real estate industry. I write about healthcare, so that's the area I focused on. But what happened is we all turned up having a different number of how many baby boomers there are in the United States. My story said 75 million. Mike Sunick's story said 79 million. And at the end, when we were proofing those pages, we said, uh-oh, we better get a more accurate number. So we called Jim Chang back over at the State Department, and he helped me figure it out. And he actually gave me the accurate number, and it's 76,980,577. So 76.9 million. So we actually have 76.9 million baby boomers in the nation. So I thought that was pretty cool. That was the best piece of information I got out of all that research.
Well, it's interesting because we quote 78 million. I think you probably heard it in the intro that we quote 78 million, and those are numbers that we've arrived at through any number of resources, and that seemed to be the most the most prolific number, I guess, the one that,
yeah,
that appeared most often, and so we just went with 78 million. I have to admit, I mean, we didn't do any massive amount of research on it, but everywhere was 78 million boomers in the country.
Yeah, we kept hearing all these numbers, and so I know what you mean, and that's exactly what we did too. We just kind of, this is the one we're hearing the most, but thank goodness for Jim Chang, because he got us the accurate number. So from now on, we know 76.9, at least for now, anyway.
Yeah. So it's interesting then that 76.9 million people, there's 848,934 in Maricopa County, and
yes,
82,648 in Pinal County. So that's a nice big number in and of itself right there. But then when you look at all of Arizona, the number that you have is 1.48 million baby boomers, according to the 2010 census.
Yes, exactly.
And that's a pretty hefty number. Do you have any sense of how Arizona rates per capita to any other states with regard to the total number. I mean, it might be the case where New York has more, California has more, because they're larger states. But as far as percentage of population, did you ever come across that at all?
We actually were trying to get those numbers, and Jim Chang would have been able to help us, but I found him too late. I found him too close to deadline. So that is something we might be able to do as a follow-up. That's a good idea. That was an unanswered question I had in my main story. So we'll tune into that one, and I'll get back with you on those numbers.
That sounds great. Well, let's talk a little bit about your specialty as far as being a writer in the health area, biotech, and what was the other one?
Healthcare, biotech, and education.
Education. How is it that you selected those three categories, or did they select you?
That's funny. When I first started out here, almost 25 years ago, I started out in the research department as an editorial assistant. It was just the grunt job of the staff newsroom. And when two reporters had left the paper, one was a healthcare reporter and one was a marketing media reporter, and originally I wanted to be in public relations. I wanted to actually write jingles for the ad industry. I wanted to write them and sing them. That was my whole goal in life. Pretty crazy.
Wow.
Anyway, so this beat opened up to do advertising. I thought, oh, that'd be perfect. I can get into the industry that way by writing about them first. And so I had the choice to pick between healthcare and advertising and marketing. And for some reason, I just said healthcare. I have no idea why, because I knew nothing about healthcare. When I first started on the beat, I had no idea the difference between a PPO and an HMO. I had no idea what I was doing. It was really kind of scary at the time. But, you know, you just kind of learn as you go and just kind of stuck with it over all the years and have been covering healthcare the entire time. And then about 10 years ago, when Dr. Jeff Trent had decided to move back to Phoenix, he was here. He grew up here. He went to Arcadia High School. He was at the NIH doing cancer research, and he decided he wanted to start a company, and we had a lot of people here who really worked to convince him to bring those headquarters here to Phoenix, and that was the International Genomics Consortium 10 years ago. And so he chose us and started building that, and then they created TGen, the Translational Genomics Research Institute, and I was lucky enough to be the one who broke that story that Jeff Trent was coming here. We had no idea how big it was going to be when I wrote that story, though. And so that was the beginning of really focusing on biotech, so that became another beat of mine that I started covering 10 years ago. It's been fun.
So tell us a little bit about that story and what they do. I don't know that a lot of people...
Oh.
And there's a lot of story here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stories in the Business Journal that I look at and I read and I go, oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that was going on in Arizona. And I think a lot of people have that, because people that read the Business Journal, and I don't consider myself to be one of them on a regular basis, but people that read the Business Journal are certainly much more engrossed, possibly, in the business aspect of this state than the average Joe that's walking down the street and going out to play softball or golf or working wherever they're working. But they don't understand or are even interested in the inner workings of business in Arizona. So they may not know about that article or that business. So tell us just briefly about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, you're right. That is so true, that our readers are the CEOs, the decision makers, the owners of businesses. We have a lot of high executive level people, the ones that are making the decisions about their companies. And so they look to us to help them figure out what's going on in the industry, and they make decisions. They'll read a story that a company bought some vacant land, and they're right there, first ones, you know, Monday morning calling that company to say, you know, I have something for you. And it just really helps connect businesses together, and where they're doing deals with each other. So they use our paper as a tool. So our job is to arm them with knowledge so that they can make those good business decisions. But as far as you wanted to hear more about the biotech industry?
Yes, please.
Okay, great. So back then, 10 years ago, that's when Dr. Jeff Trent decided to establish his presence here. It's not like we didn't have biotech companies here. Intrinsic BioProbes was here. They've been operating. That was a spin-out company from ASU. And they were, you know, we had a lot of small biotech companies. Tucson actually had a stronger biotech presence long before we even knew, you know, thought about trying to create our own biotech presence here in the Phoenix area, because the University of Arizona's medical school, and they have their spin-outs. Ventana came out of U of A and now is owned by, Roche? I'm blanking on the big, gigantic pharmaceutical company that now owns Ventana. They have thousands of employees down in Tucson. But so that's our goal. Our goal is to become a biotech hub here, the way San Diego created their biotech hub 30, 40 years ago. And one thing that we have here in the Phoenix area that a lot of people throughout the nation don't have is a collaborative spirit where they really tear down those silos, tear down those walls, and really have a strong interest in working together. And what's interesting about that is the National Institutes of Health, the way they send out their grants, their grant applications, they're now starting to look for more collaborative research efforts. So when they're looking to who they're going to give their money to, they want to give it to the people that are collaborating. And so we already had that strong spirit. So we've been getting a lot more grants, federal grants for research than we had in the past. So that's shown how much we've grown our biotech hub here. So it's been a big growth pathway. The Arizona bio industry has just continued to grow over the years. And it's not growing as fast as some people had wanted or hoped, but that recession kind of got in the way and didn't help matters any. But I think they're starting to right themselves and continuing to expand and hire people and spin out companies where people will leave a certain company and then start their own. And that organic growth is what they're looking for to continue that growth of the industry.
Explain when you talk about a biotech company, what are some of the things that they are producing or doing? I mean, biotech is probably still a pretty broad spectrum, but what are some of the things that in Arizona as a general rule, and if you want to specify it to Maricopa County, that's fine, but what are some of the products of these biotech companies?
Oh, yeah. You know, we have a strong, you know, we started out thinking that we would be focusing on medical devices, because we noticed that we had a strong presence of medical device companies here in the Phoenix area, and also expanding out to Flagstaff, because we have Gore, W.L. Gore in Flagstaff, and they've expanded here to Phoenix. So we kind of thought that's where our focus was going to be. But what we didn't realize is how strong we would become in personalized medicine. And personalized medicine basically is where they will create a cocktail of drugs for a particular person based on their molecular makeup. And so no two person is you know, alike in terms of their genetic makeup. And so what we're trying to do here in Phoenix is figure out how to determine each person's molecular makeup and target specific drugs for that particular person. So some people, and you've heard that, with the, like, it's already out there for breast cancer. There's a, I think they call it the BRCA1. I'm not sure exactly, but there, for certain types of breast cancer, if you have a type of breast cancer, they know that certain treatments will work for you. And if you have another type, they know that won't work for you. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to figure out how to target a particular medication to your particular illness that you have. And in the past, when we've always had chemotherapy and radiation, and that's more of a shotgun approach where you just kind of blast the entire body with that poison, basically,
right,
because it's killing healthy cells at the same time as the bad tumors. So this is more of a targeted approach. And So that's and we have a real collaborative spirit in doing that, and that's what TGen does, and they work with Scottsdale Healthcare to do those clinical trials to test those drugs on patients. So what's great about living here is that our doctors are involved in those clinical trials, and if you have a cancer that the doctors are telling you, it's time to start thinking about hospice and there's really nothing I can do for you, those clinical trials are your last chance to try something, an experimental drug that's not yet approved by the FDA but is in the process of going through those trials to get approval. Let's try that drug on you and see if we can, just see if that works. I mean, it's just it's one last shot in the dark, and let's see if we can make it work. And so that's why living here, we're lucky to be part of that because we have access to those clinical trials as patients.
How many clinical trials do you think are going on? I mean, just give me a ballpark.
Oh, I did a story about 5 or 6 years ago, and I think there were 4,000 clinical trials going on back then.
Wow.
And
wow.
So it's got to be, I would say, it may be double. It'd be good to write another story on that. Thanks for that other idea. I better write that one down, too. Another update I need to do. But, yeah, we really do a lot of clinical trials. And you'll hear some of those on the radio. You'll hear them advertise, oh, we need, do you have this disease? We join this clinical trial. And you'll hear those. But a lot of times you don't hear them. And you sometimes will just kind of get it through your doctor. So those people that are putting on the clinical trials what they're trying to do is get the word out to the doctors. And sometimes, that can be tough because doctors are busy. So you can also go to, the FDA? Yeah, it's the FDA website where you can go and type in, as a patient, and type in clinical trials and look up clinical trials that are going on in your state for a particular disease that you have, and then you can try to find the doctors that way. So there's that way as well.
Wow, it's amazing to think that there are that many going on in the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
I would, who'd have thunk it, And
I know, it's amazing.
No, and I think that's an example of what I was talking about, that people don't get the information, they don't know what's going on, and then when you're as nice a publication, as good a publication as the Business Journal is, I mean, it's still, like we discussed earlier, it's a bit of a niche publication, and as a small business person myself, I get the Business Journal and I look through there, and what I'm looking through the Business Journal for is I'm looking for interesting people to have on the radio show. So I have a completely different use for the Business Journal than most do. But if I were looking to, and I'm also looking to see if there's anybody in there that may want to buy advertising for the show.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah. So you're using it as a tool as well.
Exactly. But the small businessman, and I consider myself a small businessman, but I have a broader reach, and I think I have a little more use for many more different areas than the average guy that is selling insurance for State Farm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that when I remember the Business Journal as it started years ago, and I mentioned when we were talking about you coming on the show that I had a friend that was one of the original people in the management of the Business Journal way back when it was a Cordovan publication, and I got hired by the San Diego Business Journal. It certainly has changed in all those years. I mean, it certainly has changed, which was how many years ago was that? 30 years ago, anyhow?
Yeah.
The Business Journal was around. And it's completely different, because back then it was more targeted, I believe, the San Diego was when I got there, and certainly I think the Phoenix as well. We're targeted more towards small businesses, mom-and-pop businesses, people employing 3, 5, 10 people, and it was a really little different than it is now. And then over the years, it's grown up, and it's become basically a financial newspaper in some respects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And we've, throughout the years, we've tried to stay true to the small business and make sure that we're offering them, because really small businesses are what make up our our economy here in Arizona. We have more small businesses than we do large businesses, that's for
right.
sure.
Right, absolutely. And I know that you do some networking things too, don't you?
Yeah, we do.
And so you give small businesses an opportunity to get together and talk to one another through your networking processes. Do you know anything about that as far as, what is that, a monthly thing?
Oh, we have so many. Let me see. If we went to our website, you can just click on and see what kind of networking events we have. I usually get involved when I have to moderate a panel related to my particular beat. So recently I hosted one on healthcare reform and talking about how businesses will be impacted by healthcare reform. And so whenever we do these, we want to make sure it's focused on how you as a business owner, how you're going to be impacted by whatever we're talking about. So we do those throughout. I think we're actually even doing them monthly these days.
Yeah. The other thing I enjoy looking at in the Business Journal and looking at the thing that the part of on the move, things that people have got promoted and moving up or changing or whatever the case might be, I think those are always interesting.
And very popular.
I've found some interesting interviews in there as well over the years. So that's... And then, of course, Business Pulse is always fun to look at to see what people's opinions are. So that's it's always good. It's all good stuff. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's all good stuff.
Thank you.
So, well, let's get to one of the topics that you wrote about. We've got a case now where the Affordable Health Care Act or the Health Care Act or some call it Obamacare, which I don't like that name.
Yeah, because
I just have this sense that whenever it's called Obamacare, it's said with a sneer. But the Affordable Health Care Act and the Health Care Act is setting up, gives local states the opportunity for these exchanges.
Yes.
Can you tell us what is an exchange? First of all, just generically, what is one of these? What is an exchange?
Definitely. Basically, a state exchange is where individuals and small businesses will be able to go shop and compare health care insurance. So what our goal is to get these health insurance carriers, you know, like Blue Cross and Aetna and Cigna and all the others that we don't really hear about, to be able to post their information online so that consumers and small businesses can go and just compare, and they can look it up, and they can see how much it's going to cost, how rich those benefits are, and we want to see it more like a standardized package. Here, everybody has to offer this amount of benefits, and then they compare them. Actually, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid, CMS, the ones who oversee Medicare and Medicaid, they already do that for Medicare Advantage plans, where you can go and you can shop for your insurance plan. You look at the Humana plan and you look up all the others and you can compare. You can say, these are the drugs that I take, so I want to find a plan that definitely includes these drugs. I want to make sure my doctor is in the network. Let's look at the network. And so that's what we want to do. We want to bring that idea to the people that aren't yet qualified for Medicare, who are... And really, we want to target the small businesses who, you know, how difficult it is to afford health insurance coverage for your small business because you just don't have those numbers to, you know, spread the risk pool. So it's going to be more expensive for your small company. And for individuals, you know how expensive that is. If you've lost your job and you're trying to get out there and get your own individual coverage, so expensive, really just outrageous. You can't even afford it. So what they're trying to do is make it so that more, as part of the Affordable Care Act, where we want to provide insurance for all, every citizen in the United States, that they would be able to go out and shop because you know how difficult it is. I mean, usually a small business would call a broker and the broker would, you know, look it up for them, but this is what they're just trying to do it so that you can actually do it yourself and empower consumers with the ability to shop the same way they'd shop for a car.
Now, there's all kinds of chatter, this being an election year, of course, you're going to have chatter about everything and how one group says how miserable this is, the other group says how wonderful it is, and one group says we're being forced to buy this and forced to buy that, and we're not free, and It just goes on and on and on and on. The talk goes on and on and on and on. What are you finding out as an independent reporter? What are you finding out about the operation of the exchanges? Who has to have the exchanges? Why do they have to have the exchanges? Or why do they have to use the exchanges, I guess?
Well, the federal government, as part of the Affordable Care Act, decided that every state would have an exchange. And every state was given the option to either do it themselves or to have the federal government do it for them. And so a couple of years ago, the federal government started sending out money to give to the states so that they can kind of study the issue or look into the idea. So we got $1 million, and then we got another $30 million grant here in Arizona to look at how we might be able to set up an exchange. And so we've taken that money to be able to look at, study the issue and see what we can do. So they've people on the state level working with insurance companies and other stakeholders in the industry trying to see how we could set that up here. The idea of the federal government wanting every state to have this so that the consumers and small businesses would have that ability to go ahead and shop in a transparent way for health insurance, comparing them all against each other.
So now, how do the exchanges fit into the fact that the state is going to get however many millions of dollars? Was it $800 million or something like that?
The $800 million is what is the next round of funding that's going to be available for states in general. So we would get a portion of that if we decided to apply for that next round of funding. And that's going to help them. Those are for those who they're really serious about setting it up. This is going to help them get it started. The other money that we've gotten over the past couple of years has been to study the issue and determine if we want to play in this game. And now this is the serious money that says, yes, we do want to do this. We want to apply for this funding so that we can actually set up an exchange.
And the person that makes this decision as to whether to accept the money or not accept the money, set up the exchange or not set up the exchange, is Governor Jan Brewer. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Now, does she make this, is this a unilateral decision? Is she the only one that has the power to make that decision?
Well, she does. So she's been working with our state Medicaid program, which is ACCESS, the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, other stakeholders, community members, hospitals, her healthcare team. She's been just really tapping into everyone's brains about what is going to be the best decision for Arizona. Are we going to set up an exchange? And yeah, we've accepted $30 million in funding so far, but are we really going to do this? I was talking to a broker yesterday who mentioned that he's hearing that we might decide not to set up the exchange. What does that mean? So I just called the governor's office this morning to try to see if there were any more decisions made, but really they're still at the same place they were when I wrote this story last week. So they're still studying the issue. They're still really trying to determine if they are indeed going to set up the state exchange, but it sounds like they may be leaning not to do that.
So what does that mean in the state of Arizona? All of a sudden, do we not get this money? Is the money lost? Because the money... Let me just ask a couple of other questions. Well, I'll give you a multi-question question here.
Okay.
What happens to the money if we do not set up the exchanges? If we get money, regardless of how we get it, is the only thing that money can be used for having to do with the administration of the ACCESS program or the Medicaid program? And does the amount of money change whether we take it or the federal government sets up the exchange for us?
Okay. First question. What happens to the money if we don't set up the exchange? So the money that I mentioned in the story, that $800 million that's going to be out there for all states to share, that's only given to those who decide to go ahead and set up the exchange, that you apply for that grant, and yes, we want to set up the exchange, give us some money. So that's what that is. So if we don't set up the exchange, we don't get that. We don't get that money. So and that particular set of dollars has nothing to do with the Access Medicaid program. So that it's only for setting up an exchange. So now, if the federal government sets up the exchange for us, that is what I'm not sure. If we still get that money, or if the federal government just does it on its own, that I'm not sure what would happen with that. But I can check and get back with you on that one.
All right, let's say that we decide to set up the exchanges. Because you hear on the news, why wouldn't a governor accept that exchange accept that money? Because all of a sudden they're going to have people that are going to lose health care benefits, not be able to get health care benefits. I mean, all the scare tactics on both sides.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
Are there strings attached to that $800,000? 800, whatever it is, $800 million or whatever it is?
I don't think so. This is just me not really knowing for sure, but I don't think so. The way I understood it is that you get that money to set up the exchange. It doesn't have anything to do with anything else. You just get the money if you're going to set it. It's the money, you use that money to start setting up the exchange, and whatever that means, setting up a computer system, or you're setting it up online, whatever that means, the technical infrastructure of it, all of, you know, whatever it costs to set up the exchange, I think that's what that money only is used for. And if you said, if we decide to set up the exchange, what does that mean? Did you ask what does it mean if we don't set up the exchange? What would happen?
Yes.
Now, here's what I think. The way I understood it originally is that the federal government, if we don't do it, the federal government does it for us.
I understand that.
Yeah, and I don't think there will be a state with no exchange. I don't think that's how it's going to work. I think every state will have an exchange, whether they do it themselves or the federal government takes over. And I think people weren't liking the idea of the federal government taking over, which is why they decided, okay, let's figure out how to do this.
I've heard that it's paid for the first 3 years, and then the state has to contribute 10%, and then it goes up. So that over the course of the period of several years down the road, the state is paying a larger percentage, larger percentage, larger percentage. And that's why the states are saying, I don't want to have the exchange because I don't want to pay that percentage. But in the interim, you've got it by not taking it. You've got people that are now, especially with regard to the Access program, are not getting care. But that's nothing. That's nothing new in Arizona, because that's been happening for the last several years, anyhow, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. And it's good you mentioned that because actually our governor has two decisions to make. One is she going to set up the state insurance exchange, and we also as a state have the option to expand Medicaid. And if we do expand Medicaid, what that means is people originally right now who don't qualify for Access because they make too much money, but they still don't make enough money to buy their own insurance because they got to pay for their bills and their food, those people, that notch group, sometimes we call them the working poor, because they have jobs, but they just, maybe they work for a small business and they don't provide coverage. So that group of people, those are the ones that we're worried about getting coverage, because if we don't expand Medicaid and we don't set up an insurance exchange, then where does that leave that group?
Mm-hmm. That's the group
uninsured.
That's the group that I was referring to as far as being uninsured.
Mm-hmm.
There has been another question. I just got so many questions popping into my head here. The big money, the $800 million or whatever the heck it is, does that have to be earmarked for a particular usage, or can that be used anywhere in the state for any other budgetary shortfalls that we want to use it for?
No, only to set up the state exchange. That's all you get to use it for.
The reason I ask that question is because the state legislature has a habit of making revenue sweeps and going through and grabbing money from the coffers of everything they possibly can, the education department, any place else you can think of, including things from the Arizona Highways Magazine, for crying out loud. I mean, they grab it from all over.
That's true.
And I'm just wondering if that money was able to be grabbed.
Well, they say it's not. I mean, you're right. You're right. It somehow gets taken anyway, doesn't it? But,
yeah.
We'll keep an eye on that one, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's something that you hate to think that this can't be handled in a professional way, but there's just, I mean, that's why they call it politics, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Well, they're going to need it. They're going to need that money they get, because it's going to cost something to get that thing set up.
So, Governor Jan Brewer, and I don't know if you want to get into this topic, but Governor Jan Brewer is pretty well known nationally for her disdain for the President of the United States. She is less than his. She's not one of his cheerleaders. Let's put it that way.
That's a good way to say it.
You're not going to see her on the sidelines shouting, "Give me an O, give me a B." That's not going to happen anytime soon that I can think of.
No, I don't think so.
Is it possible that her, if she were to choose to not set up the exchanges, that would just be another way of her saying, take this exchange and have fun with it, President Obama?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it very well could be.
I have nothing to go on, absolutely nothing to go on, other than what has been reported and what we have seen.
Mm-hmm.
She has made all kinds of crazy choices in her term. Mm-hmm. She has supposedly, and I'm saying supposedly because I don't know. I just know what I hear and what I read, and that she has a friend that worked with her campaign that is involved in the prison system with regard to contracting out the prisons. Now she's got this other fellow that was involved in something or other that was somehow doing some things for her. I mean, she's got this stuff just kind of all around her.
Yeah.
And she doesn't think she. And the latest thing, of course, is that she's trying to take it to the Supreme Court, apparently, about same-sex partners sharing in their health care benefits. I don't understand it. It just doesn't. I don't understand the reason, because she doesn't seem to want to talk about it to anybody. She doesn't want to answer any questions. It may be that she's got a perfectly legitimate and understandable and can be supported reason. But if she's not talking about it, it just makes me think that something's gone awry somewhere. Do you have any sense of any of that and her lack of cooperation? I mean, does she cooperate with you as a member of the press?
You know, a better person to ask is our reporter Mike Sunix. He is our he's our pro when it comes to covering politics. He knows so much. Mm-hmm. He might be another great interview for you, because I think he'd be able to answer that question. I don't even have enough knowledge to even say anything on that one.
I understand, but I'll rely on you to connect me with Mike Sunix.
I definitely will. He's fabulous. He's always on the radio. He's our TV star. He's on Horizon, so he'll definitely offer a lot for you.
We at one point we had a show that we would do twice a month called Arizona Politics, and we would do it at the time with Matt Bunk, who was the managing editor of the Arizona Capital Times.
Oh, okay.
And Matt was a lot of fun to get on the show, because the Capital Times was one of those papers that is right down the middle on everything. It reports without, you know, they don't do a lot of editorializing and so on and so forth. They just say, this is what's happening. Let the public decide and the readers decide on whether or not they think these people are being idiots. Make your own decision. Here's the facts.
Yeah, definitely.
Matt has since moved on, and he has his own publication now up in North Dakota that he started, which is seems to be very successful. He's a young guy, and he's a really neat young guy, and I always enjoyed having him on the show. We always had some good times.
That's great.
I'd like to have that kind of a person again to do a somewhat regular show.
Mike Senex is your guy. He's definitely the expert on this.
All right. Well, mention my name in Poughkeepsie.
I will, definitely.
So what is your gut feel? What is your thinking with regard to the exchanges? Do you think it'd be something that should be done or would be beneficial? Or do you have an opinion?
Well, I think it'd be beneficial. I think for individuals and small businesses to be able to compare in a transparent way prices and benefits where it's not confusing to them, it's all right there in front of them on their screen, I think that might be helpful for them.
Yeah, I would think so, too. And apparently, all I've heard is that it's going to happen one way or another. Either Governor Brewer decides that she's going to set them up, or the government's going to do it for her, because there are going to be Arizona exchanges, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's due to happen. So the question is whether or not she decides to wag her finger in the president's face.
There's that.
There's always that. Let's talk a little bit about some of the healthcare services, because this is your beat. Let's talk a little bit about some of the healthcare services that are happening in the state of Arizona as it pertains to the baby boomer population.
Definitely.
I read your article about John C. Lincoln and their G60 team. How long has that been around? And tell our listeners a little bit more about that.
Okay, great. They're just getting it ramped up right now. So it was really interesting because Dr. Alicia Mangrum, she's the medical director at John C. Lincoln Trauma Services. She was in Texas when she had created this program there, and then we recruited her out here, and now she's duplicating that service here. And basically what G60 is think of it this way. If we're 20 and we fall and break our ankle, we're going to heal a lot differently than when we're 60. We just don't heal as quickly as we age. It's a horrible truth that we just hate to admit, but that's how it is. And so what's really important for anybody over 60, and that's why they call it G60, for any patient over 60, they're going to treat them differently. As soon as they present to the emergency room, they're going to rapidly identify that they could fit in this target audience, and they're going to triage them. They're going to send them where they need to go. They're going to expedite their admission. So within 2 hours, they're going to be in the G60 inpatient unit there at the hospital. And then what happens is they start activating a specially trained multidisciplinary team. And so this clinical team has trauma surgeons, trauma nurse practitioners, coordinators, hospitalists, physical medicine and rehab specialists, all of these, nutritionists, physical occupational speech therapists, respiratory therapists, pharmacists, social workers, case managers, all of these people in their different area specialties will be on this clinical team, and they will manage this patient as a team. And so by doing that, that will help them heal faster, and they're saying that it's like fourfold increase in being able to help these older patients start on their way to recovery just by taking this kind of approach.
Is it an approach that is only available at John C. Lincoln North, or is it something that's available at other hospitals in the Phoenix metro area as well?
I haven't heard that it's at any other hospitals. As far as I know, John C. Lincoln, the North Mountain Hospital, is the only one doing this so far.
Well, I've got a special place in my heart for John C. Lincoln Hospital. My daughter was born at the original John C. Lincoln Hospital over in Sunny Slope. And to the best of my knowledge, my then wife, her mother, had excellent care, and so did the child. And it was always good with John C. Lincoln, as far as I was concerned, and it's interesting to see this. Now, John C. Lincoln has a reputation of being one of the top trauma hospitals in the Valley. Is that correct?
Yeah, and they also have a nursing staff that has received national recognition. They have a magnet designation status, and that magnet status is because of their nursing staff. And it takes a lot to become a magnet hospital. I think they were the first here in the Valley to become a magnet hospital several years ago. Down in Tucson was the first in the state. And then now many of our hospitals throughout the Valley are magnet hospitals.
So the various designations of these various hospitals as being a heart hospital or being a geriatric hospital or whatever, a cancer hospital,
yeah.
How do those designations come to pass? Do you know? I mean, do they seek that, or what do they do?
They seek it. Like for magnet status, for top level nursing staff, they apply for that through the nurse association that handles that nationally, and so they'll apply for that kind of designation, and they go through grueling. They just really look over them and make sure they're doing quality, their nursing staff ratios are good, and they look at a whole bunch of criteria to determine if they have that magnet status. And so they'll do that. And there's other designations that, they used to call it, I can't even think what they used to call it, but it's the, I can't think, I'm blanking on what it is, but most hospitals seek a designation where an outside organization will come in and give them that gold stamp of approval.
So if Banner Hospital in Sun City here, as an example, is considered to be a heart hospital, they have a classification like that, they have sought that. They have indeed sought that.
Yes.
And that's certainly nice to know. And for instance, there's the Cardin's Children's Hospital in Tempe or Mesa, where my second granddaughter was born. Children's hospitals, senior facilities. Do they have designations that they seek, or is it just the method of this is what we specialize in, and we set ourselves up that way? How does
both
that
actually? Yeah, actually both. Like Phoenix Children's Hospital, all they see are pediatric patients up to age 18, and the same with Cardin's. They decided they needed a focus out in the East Valley for children only, and that those doctors and those nurses are trained in treating children. So that's a different kind of designation than a magnet status or something like that, where they come in and get reviewed by a board.
Okay, I see. So that's that they've just chosen to set up that as their primary practice.
Yes.
Well, this has certainly been an interesting conversation that we've been a couple of things that we've been talking about here. The last thing, the third article you wrote was the baby boomers create a silver tsunami. What is that? What is that about regards the baby boomers and all the other things that are involved? Is that somehow involved with the healthcare as well?
Basically, that story was kind of setting us up for our whole baby boomer package. That was kind of the lead-in story that basically says every industry that operates is or is going to be impacted by this baby boomer population that kind of goes through the system. And it was interesting. I interviewed one person who is a baby boomer, and he said he remembers when he went to school as in elementary school that the classes were so big. They had to be ready for this group of kids that the classrooms were 50 people in the classroom, and the schools weren't really ready for that as those as those kids were coming through. And then the universities had to face that next because they had this huge group of students coming in, so they had to gear up for growth in that area. And now as this population that we call the baby boomers continues to move and age, and now the hospitals and the healthcare providers are gearing up to prepare for this group as they age, and you know, with chronic illnesses, and we have obesity and diabetes and all of these things, and as we try to treat them and a lot of them as they come through the system. So that silver tsunami, that idea of just kind of like this wave that's coming through.
Yes, I've also heard it referred to as a pig in a python.
Yes, that's how I envisioned it as I was explaining it exactly.
this bulk coming through.
This
large mass just
slowly
but surely inching its way. And it's interesting when you talk about that aspect of things, is that in every stage along the way of the baby boomer as a cohort, although it's a very diverse cohort, it's got 77 million people in it.
Your new number.
Yeah, exactly. And none of them. I mean, we have diverse opinions about everything, as you well know, whether it be politics or skim milk versus whole milk. It doesn't much matter.
Mm-hmm.
But we have affected everything in every portion of what we're doing.
Yes.
Regardless of our position, we have affected every societal change we have been involved in over the, since we were born, since 47, 46. Infant care, Dr. Spock, I mean, you name it. We've been involved in all of it some way or another. And that being said, I can't understand, because I mean, certainly in the 60s and 70s, it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and we were searching for, and we wanted to change things, and we wanted to have a effect change in the country, and so on and so forth. And now it has evolved to this. The baby boomer population is split, in my opinion, and they're fighting each other philosophically and politically. And that where is the let's all get together and make it common good for all, and let's all sacrifice a little and make it work? And I don't understand why we're all so set in our ways that we have to have these butting of heads. It's just it's amazing for a group of people in society that had such promise. My wondering is whether or not we are living up to our promise. I don't know if we are or not.
Well, it's hard to get that's a large group of people. A small group of people is going to disagree, but a large group of people, you're just going to have so many diverse opinions. Is that possible?
I don't know. I wrote a short blog yet to be posted, but I thought to myself that we've got 20% of the people on the extreme left. We've got 20% of the people on the extreme right. Forget those, and let's the 60% that's in the middle, let them reach consensus. Because you're never going to do anything with the extreme right and the extreme left. They're just making so much noise. And all they want to do is scream and shout and be heard and say me, me, me like a bunch of 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds. it just gets tiring after a while. But let's talk about the massive group in the middle, the one that is that used to be called the silent majority. Let's get those folks together. But
yeah.
I don't know, maybe you can't even do that anymore.
Well,
it's amazing.
Maybe you can. That's your mission. You can do it.
Yeah, that's right. There you go. If nominated, I will not serve. If I will not run. If elected, I will not serve. Oh, Angela, this has been an absolute joy talking to you for this last hour. I mean, we're right down to the short rows here. Give us information, please, about how they can reach you if you want to be reached. What can they look for? How do you talk about your business journal and all that good stuff as we're wrapping up?
Oh, yeah, great. I have a direct line if anybody wants. It's 602-308-6521, or you can just go online and find us that way at phoenix.bizjournals.com. And basically, I'm always looking for stories in related to business, so how anything healthcare-related, how it's related to business, biotech, education. So if you have any story ideas for me, I definitely look forward to hearing them.
Well, that's great. I'm going to give you a call after the show, and there's a couple of things that I wanted to kind of mention to you, but I didn't want to do it on air. But anyhow, I really do appreciate the fact that you're here. We'll talk again very shortly, and thanks for being a guest today. I know it wasn't something that you probably planned on doing when I first contacted you, but you're a great guest, and I really appreciate you being with me.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And we've been talking to Angela Gonzalez, senior writer with the Phoenix Business Journal, and talking about all these things that she wrote about the silver tsunami and healthcare and the exchanges and so on. And an excellent writer, very easy to read and understand everything that she has to say in print. And sometimes that's not always possible. But Angela is doing a great job, and I certainly enjoyed reading her articles as well. You've been listening to the Boom and the Babe Show here on Blog Talk Radio, where we try to bring you good conversation to the world. I think we did a pretty good job today talking with Angela from the Business Journal. This is the Boom and the Babe Show on Blog Talk, and we'll be back again on Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock in the morning. If we're not on air at 10 o'clock, we will be on probably the next day or so as we're developing some new things that we're doing. So we're missing a few days as far as consecutive broadcasts is concerned, but please stop in and listen to see if we're there. And also, you can always listen to the archives of this show or any others that we've done over the last 2.5 years or so on the Blog Talk station, and they're on iTunes as well. We're always on Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock on the West Coast and 1 o'clock on the East Coast. Remember, we do much more than host this show. Go to boomerthebabe.com. Also sign up for our Boomer Experience Speaks online magazine right there at that site. Please make the second half of your life the best half of your life. Have a great day, everybody, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Take care now.
To the Boom and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.